Hello, World Walkers. Yes, I'm talking to you. Welcome to World Talkers, an Evermore fan podcast. Lend us your ear, learn something new, and develop a mutual obsession. Goblins, dragons, charismatic executioners, and more await as we unravel the secrets that lay beyond the portal of Evermore.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our podcast, World Talkers. We are an unofficial Evermore fan podcast, and today we're excited to have you once more. You've probably listened to episode one, but if not, we wanted to go over episode one a little bit today as we dive into episode two. I am Wyatt. To my left is...
Hey guys, I'm Chandler.
How's it going? I'm Skylar.
And I am Daniel. It's good to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
It is good to be back. Right now, what we're going to do is we're going to do a little recap of episode one. If you haven't listened, go for it. Go listen to that, because that's going to help you get prepared for today's episode, where we talk about the story of lore and the story that the park is all about. So if one, you had to learn about the mechanics of the park, now you're learning about what's actually happening in the park and what you can participate in.
If you don't want to know the story, this will be a spoilers story and probably just kind of a spoilers podcast, but we'll try to point that out as we do it in the future,
right?
So that we're not just kind of getting you unhooked. We'll try to keep it nice, but this is definitely a very spoiler heavy episode about the story of lore.
So. Warning, this episode contains spoilers of lore. Warning,
you have been warned.
Is this like an amber alert?
I feel like we need like the nuclear like sirens going off in the background, like the spoilers. So getting into
the recap of episode one,
because that's what we want to talk about. That's on our outline. I see that. I guess, just briefly, correct me if I'm wrong. Last episode, big points that we were talking about. Basically, we were fangirling about Evermore. We talked about why it was cool, why you should want to go, where it is. Just sort of like the basics of, if you were to look into Evermore online and there was a piece of information that you wanted to know more about, that's what we were hoping to address in the first episode. And so now we want to get into more of what is the story Evermore is trying to tell while you are there?
And this telling of the story is going to be coming from the information that we gathered as a group of friends that just happened to win. Like, we don't have the official story. This is just how we interacted with the characters and what we were able to piece together. Because there isn't just one person that you can go and talk to and get everything. You gotta talk to everyone and put it together like a puzzle. This is the grand story of Evermore, of this specific season, which we're talking about, which is lore.
Just to repoint that out, we kind of mentioned it last time in the last episode, but our information is very much not necessarily complete. We may have missed things, so feel free to message us on any of our social medias or on our email to let us know what we missed, and we can talk about that and share that later on.
Perfect. We're going to go right into it. Evermore is split into three seasons: Lore, Aurora, and Mythos. For now, we don't know what the future may hold, and we hope that as we continue to go and experience it, that they will have new stories for us. And that is
just again as a quick when are those seasons?
If I have heard correctly, so the way that the seasons are broken down, lore looks like it's going to be more of a fall season type of an event, where you have more of the in terms of just like the color palettes of things, you have the fun Halloween oranges and blacks, and that's sort of the color emotion that I feel evoked by lore. You have the moving in to Thanksgiving time. There was a bunch of hay bales all around, so that's kind of the setting for lore. You have
it's a Halloween pumpkin fest.
Super duper fun. Aurora is a, as they stated it on their webpage, a Dickensian-style Christmas-themed event. So it's going to be happening during winter. But it does go past Christmas. It just ended at the start of February.
February 2nd,
to be specific. So it certainly goes far beyond Christmas. So it's really more of a winter season. And it looks like Mythos for now is going to be a summer season. Who knows if it'll become a spring-summer thing. Again, we don't know all of the things that Evermore has in store, but that's just the rough breakdown. Lore in the fall, Aurora in the winter, and Mythos in the summer.
And all of these seasons in the story context correlate to an actual place. And I think that's where we're going to start our recap for the season of Lore, is saying that these seasons are actual places or worlds that you can travel to by way of a portal that opens.
Yes, exactly. Portals have always been important and a part of the history of Evermore. Portals connect Evermore to different worlds and different times. And this explains the kind of cool mythologies and gods. I really love that the park has actually built that into the story. That the Norse gods, the Greek gods, everything are simply just beings from another world, from another portal, perhaps, and they have powers only because they come from a world with powers, and that way they have powers here. I love that.
Like Superman.
And one of the interesting things about these portals is that they appear to be, in our world, deeply connected to it. That there have been many portals throughout history that have opened here and seem to lead here but not to other places. And it looks like from our chats with some of the characters in the park that it has to deal with universal ley lines of power that run through the earth and connect things therein. So just a little bit more about the portals, about what how they open and why these people are able to come in the first place.
It's a naturally reoccurring phenomenon that portals open here in Evermore, but nowhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, or rather, well, it's
to,
more...
To Evermore.
Yeah. They come to Earth. Earth and Evermore specifically has a very high concentration of portals, and that, as far as I'm aware, is the only way to actually travel to another world. So in order for someone from Mythos to go to Aurora, they'd have to wait. They'd have to leave and then wait for the Mythos portal to close and then wait for the Aurora portal to open and then go through Aurora. Yeah. And then they can't come back until Aurora opens again.
It's kind of like a portal subway station.
Kind of, yeah.
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 So, and just kind of going back to a little bit about like that portals and the mythology of portals. We were actually talking to Giordani a lot about this, and
Giordani is the fortune teller.
Yes,
one of the many fortune tellers
who has been there. Yeah,
but he's like a really prominent figure. You can't miss him. Guy is great. Love,
he's so good.
Little blurb: love Giordani.
Yes,
the king of the Romani people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so he talked about how he knows a lot of this stuff. And how, like, when those gods would come through, the reason why they're still not, like, here today is that, like, one of two things that have happened. Their power is either connected to their portal, or they do gain power by coming here like Superman. And they keep accumulating this power, but then they become, like, an overcharged battery. So they have to return, or it destroys them. So that's perhaps, like, the explanation that's built into the Evermore mythology, is that the reason why there's not necessarily gods here, or why we haven't seen gods more prevalently. Mm-hmm.
The sad reality, though, is that for unknown reasons, after many, many years of being opened and on a regular cycle, these portals from other worlds to Evermore and to Earth closed for many, many years. They remained closed until a man named Wickham teamed up with Wen the Witch. These two, Wickham and Wen, really were at odds for a while as to how to open the portals. Yet when they came together, they succeeded in almost jump-starting that cycle once more. And they opened the first portal, which was Mythos, bringing in goblins, fairies, and other special or magical folk. This included a very beautiful man, a very prominent figure that they knew as the Fae King, or rather that they knew as Kadarin, and also other magical creatures like elves and the like.
And satyrs, like half goat people. like Tumnus on Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, if you get that reference.
If you're cultured.
Wow, okay.
That was harsh, but yes. No.
But yes.
And so, like you were just saying, they all, like, all these creatures started coming in and hanging around and getting to know Evermore getting to come into Evermore once again. And then, like, typical operating procedure is what Wickham told us is the way that, like, they made sure that this was okay is when they opened the portal, he would send Tip Top, his automaton, into the portal to check to see if it's safe.
Canary in the coal mine style.
Yes. Yeah. And then Wickham would go in after and see if it was okay. And so that's typically how that operated. And so I'm not exactly sure, maybe you guys can help me on this, but like he kept trying to open other portals. And is that or did he open Lore or did Lore just kind of open on its own? Because from what I remember, Lore was actually a new portal that they hadn't seen
that
before.
Yeah.
As far as I understand it, first came Mythos, and in that succession, just like I said, the cycle had been kickstarted, almost as if a brand new door, which had always been there, but just never part of the cycle, opened back up. Perhaps it was a part of the cycle way back when,
yeah.
But these people didn't know about it.
Gotcha.
So it just kind of piggybacked on the opening of Mythos type of a deal?
Yes.
And then eventually Mythos closes, this portal stays open, and this is where we get into something really interesting happening, where they're trying to close this portal to Lore, it's not working, and a weird darkness begins to seep in to the world of Evermore, where plants are becoming infected, animals are becoming infected, and then finally the people themselves are becoming tainted by this darkness. Even people who came in from Mythos, like Kaderin, becomes infected. His mind becomes twisted by the darkness, and he renames himself the Fey King. And some might even look to him as a sort of leader-type figure, could mistake him potentially even as the ruler of Evermore, just due to the grandiosity of the way that he was presenting himself.
And if you are familiar with the park or have gone to the website, this Kaderin person that we're talking about is the ginormous statue that they created. It was like 10 to 15 feet tall. It had horns. It was beautifully cosmetically done.
Yeah.
And in the park,
and
there was
it glowed.
It glowed. And yeah. The head would move and swivel and talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a being that got infected with the darkness, and then you could talk to him and converse with him, and it was very, very cool.
It was very cool. Probably not. I kind of just want to jump back for a second, just as an interesting tidbit that I always was kind of curious about as to why this was, is like Tip Top went into the Lore portal to check to see if it was okay. And Tip Top gave it the okay, but when Wickham went in, he noticed that something was off.
That is true. Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know, like, the nature of this darkness, and probably that's how it stayed under wraps, because I don't think Wickham necessarily knew what was happening. He just felt wrong about it. And so the way Kaderin got infected was that, like, they knew that there was some sort of darkness. They didn't know what or necessarily how to trace it, perhaps, because it was in the forest, and this darkness is like a nature-like entity or power. And then he got infected in the forest, and that's when he started kind of going a little wild and kind of more sinister.
And even his being corrupted into something that was tall and gruesome and terrifying and with the horns and everything, because he was originally a fairy, a fey person.
Exactly. And part of the sad tale of Kaderin is also the sad tale of his friends. We met Falda, who was his friend there at the park. That was actually the first person we spoke to.
Ever.
Ever.
Technically, well, it wasn't me, because I actually showed up late that day.
And I guess we did speak to the Fey King. We spoke to Kaderin before we knew he was Kaderin. We only knew him as the Fey King. Chandler and I may have pledged our allegiance to him ever so briefly.
Within the first, like, 5 minutes of
and,
really?
And then, yes. And then he did say, if you want to prove yourself basically as more than bumbling fools willing to bend the knee at the merest sign of power, how's about you go and figure some things out first before you really choose to give yourselves over to me and go talk to Falda?
To be fair, I think it was so interesting and really this amazing opportunity because everyone was staring at this 9-10 foot giant thing, whatever this was, and kind of just laughing with it. And it was actually a really cool experience that you and I had where we literally immersed ourselves in the story within the first minutes of being in the area of the park. That was really cool that I really do think we bent down.
We did.
And swore our fealty without even knowing anything about who this was.
I mean, even going back to episode one, what we were talking about last week, it's that kind of interactivity that brings Evermore to life. Because you can just look at stuff and be content, but interacting with Kadarin, bending the knee, making fools of ourselves, and then being told, hey, listen, there's more to this park. I'm giving you a quest now. Like, that was really cool. And I think that's what got a lot of other people around us. Like, oh, there's more to do here than just talk to, just sit around.
Look at this guy. I mean, it would congregate people. Like, again, I think the lore hours were, it was like 8 hours long of being in the park. I showed up like 4 hours late. And from the time that I just showed up, Kadarin, the Fae King, was surrounded by people, just like swarmed by people the whole night. And so I never actually talked to the Fae King when I first showed up. I just saw a bunch of other people talking to him. And I'm like, that's really cool. And because, again, relating to my introvertedness, I was like, I don't want to talk to the giant scary man. Especially because of how lore worked. Lore at the beginning had two parts. It was magical lore and
scary lore.
Cursed lore cursed is what it was lore. Called.
Cursed lore.
Cursed lore. And so I showed up just as cursed lore was like starting. And so like all the scary stuff was coming out and I was like, I'm alone. I need to find my friends. So I actually missed a lot of stuff the first time I went. I mean, not necessarily missed, but we were still trying to figure out how things worked. And I just ran kind of to you guys and was like, hey, what's going on?
Well, it was great because the natural progression of the park led you to the same character that we had our first major interaction with, which was Falda and Faldo. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess just to go back briefly, we talked about us coming in, but we didn't necessarily mention the fact that us being able to go to Evermore was the result of another portal opening that allowed us to step through and enter into this sort of Victorian England that appears to be a place out of time, but also somehow connected to our world as well. Personally, for me, I feel like our portal opened almost in response to the portal of lore, but that's just me. Again,
It kind of does seem like that now that you mention it. It seems kind of like that, again, the Narnia reference. Yeah. The world calls champions as it needs it, or the universe, or whoever, I guess. I do think it's very interesting that we were called to this time or space. We don't really know. I don't think either. I mean, there might be a story reason as to why that is, but some of the characters don't even know, because when we were there during Aurora, this is kind of when we get these theories that it could potentially just be like a pocket universe. Like, this is the way station of the universe. Mm-hmm. And time is very wonky in Evermore. Some people are hundreds of years old, but they don't really go by linear time. They go by portal time because the time passing in the other worlds changes. And I don't know, it's a little complex and I think kind of intentionally confusing to always kind of leave you with that air of mystery and mysticism. So
portalology is a very confounding science. But overall, that's really just the beginning of lore. There's so much more to it.
And this is where we come into the story as world walkers. This is what the townsfolk call us, as we are coming from a different world and a different time period, to come and be a part of the story of Evermore. They want us to help them with whatever needs they have, get to know them as people, just like we would do in the real world, and really be their friends, confidants, and errand boys sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, so with the rest of the story and us showing up in Evermore, we could now act like we started interacting with these people and kind of figuring out what was going on. And one of the major conflict or tension points that we first ran into is the fact that Wickham and Wen are kind of at odds with each other because they kind of neither really wants to take responsibility for lore opening up and becoming a part of, for lore becoming, like, infecting this place. And I should note that they did attempt, I don't know if we said this before, but they did attempt to close it.
Yes.
But were unable.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happened and the portal, Wickham said, shifted as if it, like, locked. To me, I kind of picture it in my mind as, like, holding on, like, talons, like, not letting things happen.
Ooh, a predator of sorts.
And I think the really cool thing was is that the stage had been set, all of these events had occurred, and then we walked into the darkness spilling out and corrupting people and corrupting things, and there was a palpable sense in the air. People were tense. You had specific groups and factions that started to arise to combat it, and they combated it in their own ways. I think you had people that were corrupted by it, and they started to go by Dark Bloods. Like, hey,
yeah,
we're Dark Bloods.
Or at least they were given the name Dark Bloods because of
what they went through. Yeah,
right. A sort of proclaimed curse that look at what has happened to these people. Don't go near them. They are Dark Bloods.
Yeah,
I kind of think of Harry Potter Mud Bloods, but yeah. It was far, far darker than that. As you have been touched by a invisible darkness that is going to rip away your soul instead of just being a child of a not
magical
wizards.
Person.
Yeah. Well, it would strip people of like their sanity. And one of those people that were like deeply affected by this, he was kind of one of the main plot points, was Finley Nettleton. He was the Miller's son, but he got infected and it literally stripped him of his sanity. Like, he was just running around and like screaming and yelling at people and just not even, you know, he didn't seem cognizant. Like, it was very feral, very animalistic. And then there was others. There was Pasha got infected. The most sweet, and like, he was great. Pasha was so great. Got infected by this and like slowly started turning insane and like growing things on his face.
Oh wait, he was the mushroom face guy?
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah.
And that really was what the darkness did. It corrupted these people, took them to not only corrupting mental capacities but also their bodies, turning them to nature. Growing vines and mushrooms and fungi literally on their skin. Not pleasant, as you can imagine.
And to just cut in, again, amazing work.
Oh,
amazing
fantastic.
Costuming
You
work.
Can tell by my reaction how much I was disgusted by Mushroom Face Guy.
It was grotesque, but like people had like ended up by the end of the season having like full limbs like made out of wood and crawling around. It was
incredible. They did a great job.
Yeah. So.
So we know what the darkness has done to corrupt the people. We've talked about these factions that kind of arose to combat the darkness. Yeah. What were some of the specific things that people were doing? Who were these factions?
I think, again, probably the very first notable faction is the Fae Kings faction, which was the Druids. And the Druids actually worshipped the Fae King. They said that he was like the natural progression of, they spoke of life. They spoke of how, you know, things grow and then they die. They basically thought that the darkness was like the natural order of the world, that we had flourished for so long that the darkness was now coming to bring decay. So, and then the Fae King was granting people power, and that's why he wanted people to join him, or that's why people wanted to join him, is because the Fae King was promising, or rather the Druids were promising, that the Fae King would save them.
See, we knew all along that we should have just joined the Fae King. We knew from the moment we met him that he would save us.
It was the natural progression of events.
We knew it. We were right.
Guys, did you see how evil he was? He
okay,
had horns.
Let's not get ahead of the story now. So we had the Fae King with the Druids. The Druids saying that they would save everyone by the Fae King's magic. Then you had directly opposed to them the Acolytes of Saint Michael. These Acolytes were followers of a strange order, hiding themselves in masks and really wanting to rid the place of this darkness, but weren't really sure how. And basically, they knew that the Druids might have some answers, so they would send people to go get some information.
spies.
Well, yeah, they were under the impression that the Fae King was, like, brainwashing or mind-controlling people. So that they wanted more information to see if that was true, if this theory was, you know, correct. And, yeah, and generally their whereabouts, like, what were they doing?
Yeah, to this day, I'm totally still not a servant of the Fae King. Just want to put that out there. He's not in my mind. And I don't speak to him regularly. Just throwing that out there. Just throwing that out there.
Good clarification.
Yeah. Just want everybody to know. Not a servant of the Fae King. Definitely not.
I may or may not be of the highest order, but we continue on.
Chandler likes to brag about that.
He's a special boy. we have these two diametrically opposed groups, the Druids and the Acolytes, and then we also have people who are trying to physically combat the darkness in the Blackhearts, who are these hunters that have come into Evermore seeking to rout out darkness through elimination. If they had their way, chances are they would have just offed all of the Dark Bloods. Ultimately, that was not what happened, but they came in to kill these twisted monsters that were literally eating the townsfolk and try to save the day. And during the story of Evermore, or rather during the story of Lore, you could join the Blackhearts by taking on quests that they gave you to go prove your mettle and willingness to fight, your ability. So you could go to the archery range and get some bullseyes, or you could go throw some axes and hit some stumps, and they would let you join up.
I'm pretty good at axe throwing. I gotta throw that out there.
Yeah, I think all four of us are hunters, because we all did the bows or the axes.
Yeah, we got some bullseyes and all that. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, we were, I guess you could say we were pretty cool.
I mean, these were like children's bows. They were children's recurve bows. Maybe not. Like, they were very low
Please
end.
Please do not cheapen my experience. I got that bullseye.
Chandler earned that. How dare you?
I threw an axe at a tree stump, and it stuck in there.
Yeah.
Feels good. Yeah.
I got a bullseye.
I did too.
They angled it.
Okay.
Well,
it was fun. It was a very fun activity.
Another thing that was interesting was you had the dynamic of the Acolytes and the Druids, and there was even a sub-dynamic, maybe a hint of a dynamic, between the Hunters and another group called the Knights. Now, we mentioned the Knights earlier in the episode about the experience of the little kid getting knighted, and we were all freaking out. But to kind of put it in a story, the Knights were actually contracted, I think, by the Mythos people, like the Mythos royalty, the elves who came from Mythos.
They actually said that they, at least those Knights in specific, came from Mythos with the elves as well. I never actually learned if they were actually from Mythos, but they may have been on that side of the portal was closed.
Who was the lead knight's name?
I don't remember. I just called him the Black Knight Dark Knight.
It was something like Aaron or something to that effect. I don't remember exactly.
I thought it was like Aurum. I don't know.
Aurum? No, that's Town Crier of Aurora.
Yeah, so the lead knight who came through the portal, who is sort of the one rallying everybody together, knighting the kids and so on, he was, speaking to him, he was from Mythos. He was a Mythosian.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good to know.
I remember there was some sort of connection, it just wasn't coming to me. But as I understand, the knights were a sort of police force that was a kind of counterbalance to the hunters, where the hunters saw extermination, you know, we gotta cut the leg off to save the body. The knights were more like, well, let's contain it. Let's work with Wickham. Let's work with Thurgood, the scientist. Let's try and figure something out. Is a more thoughtful approach. Maybe, perhaps, in the hunter's eyes, a more foolhardy approach. Not as quick or effective.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the knights are coming from the point of view is, if we destroy the thing we're trying to save, have we actually saved it? Whereas the hunters were coming up, seeing it as, this thing is a threat that is going to get everybody else. Stop it now. It was really interesting because we ended up joining both groups.
All of four.
We were in all of them. But like they didn't stop you from joining all of them, which would have kind of been an interesting thing if they were like, you're a knight, you can't join the hunters. But they didn't rob you the experience of being able to be a part of all all of it and experience all of it, which was really fun.
Yeah, which I loved how it was kind of like worked out that way. And these factions too were kind of just like joining these factions was almost kind of like a side quest because we joined them to get more information on stuff. But really what we were trying to determine was which group do we want to help and like which one actually has the right one. And so what I mean by this, what we're actually looking for is we were trying to cure the Dark Bloods. Is I think what the main quest was, or learning mm-hmm. how to mm-hmm. eradicate the darkness. And so Pasha and
Finley
and some others as well, they all were cursed with this. And then there was a scientific man, Thurgood. He was an alchemist. He was trying to concoct a potion that would kind of either at least reduce the effects or hopefully cure it as like a vaccine. And what I loved about the factions and this story with Thurgood is they kind of all tied together the way that the park functions. The quests were kind of like intrinsic and would lead you from one thing to another, kind of like we did with Sephthys and how we lost to Sephthys and then had to go meet Wen, and then we learn about these portals that's happening. With Thurgood and the Blackhearts, one of the Blackhearts' quests was to go into the mausoleum to show your bravery, and in order to do this, you had to steal a stone, a black stone, and I say quote-unquote steal, please don't actually steal from them. It was part of the quest.
Yeah, you walked in, you approached a basket, basically, and there was a person that was stationed there, an actor, playing a character, but it was basically like, just take one.
Yeah, I think it was especially like that was a little metagamed, I think, a bit.
Just a little bit.
Because it was the first night, there was a lot of people there.
And you know everyone in the park is going to grab six stones if they think they're important.
I would have taken one to take home.
Yeah, people did. I understand the compulsion. I love to collect everything. I have like one of all their coloring pages. So I don't know what it is. I like to collect the things. I know it's weird and you can make fun of me all you want. But so as a part of this hunter's quest, we ended up having the stone, and then when we talked to Thurgood, Thurgood was like, I need more carbon. Like, I think I need something. I don't know. And like the way he talked about it was reminiscent of this, and we were like, oh, we need a black stone. So we would go get another black stone and then we'd bring it to Thurgood and be like, yes, I think this is what would work. And then he started to devise a cure and stuff.
And I think if you're getting anything out of this, it's that one thing led to another. And our natural collection of information that we got from Evermore was just simply like, you're learning stuff as you go on. Like, as you're doing something for someone else, you learn about something else. So you go finish and go hop on the new thing. I think we said this in episode one, there never was a time in all of the time where we were like, well, we got nothing to do. There's always something to go learn or something to go do.
If anything, I still feel as if I missed out on stuff. And I'm sure there was, because again, there's so much information, so many quests, so many character backstories that we didn't get into. And that is very important. And again, also to mention, I think we didn't experience this all in one go. By the time we figured out some of this stuff, this was our second, maybe third visit. So yeah, again, just to kind of manage expectations and get you to understand, this was our whole experience with lore. This wasn't necessarily just one visit. Because it's so much, we wouldn't have learned it all in one visit. We're definitely kind of summarizing here.
Yeah, so the research that we were able to collect as a group and to share with the characters, and they learned with us, we determined a few things. Chief among them being that the darkness was working like a parasite that came to consume and to leech off of it, kind of going back off of what Skylar brought in earlier, talking about like that latching onto like the talons. Think of it like a leech just sucking life out of a person, just seeping the lifeblood. And while that's going on, the Fae King is garnering more and more power through those swearing devotion to him and offering him and his followers gold, which we eventually learn to be this metal that contains intrinsic magical properties, the magnitude of which I don't think we even know right now, but we still, like, but we do know is that for whatever reason, the gold was helping the Fae King grow in power.
And that brings us really to the culmination of everything. The Fae King at this time is accumulating followers, really, to be honest, accumulating souls and followers, acolytes, gold even, which is making him more magical. magically powerful. The conflict between the knights and the Blackhearts, or rather their relationship, is getting more and more intense, saying that they aren't doing a good enough job. They're bickering, there's anger, there's frustration and fear all throughout Evermore. The Blackhearts blame the knights. Faldo and the fairies confront Kadarin and asking him to remember himself. Kadarin at this time did not remember who he was and was very much corrupted.
I just wanted to say what a cool moment that was. Because in the park, how it manifested, how this scene played out, is that you had the fairies, which was Faldo, the best friend of Kadarin, and the other fairies, these group of people that cared about the Fae King and knew him before he was this all-powerful, kind of evil person, and then they went to him. You traveled with the actors from one side of the park to the other, and these actors, these wonderful actors, interacted with each other. And it was like a little small play that happened right in front of you. And it was the coolest thing. It was just the neatest thing.
A tableau of sorts.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what surprised me the most, personally, was how good the actors were at letting improv fly. Because not everything was working out. The crowd that we were in was 30 to 35. I'm lowballing 30 to 35 people just surrounding these actors like a small play. And there's times where we were shouting out like, no, he's bad, or no, you can't believe him, or remember who you are, Kadarin. Like, we were yelling at these people, like these actors, and they were so cool to just be like, silence, or no, he does not, you know. It was so interesting, and they played it off so well.
They did. And I think also a cool story thing to point out, this is like when they first addressed the Fae King as Kadarin. We had, I think that same night, we had heard that was his name. His name was Kadarin, but up until this point, we didn't really know.
Yeah, he was just the Fae King. And I think most impressive of all, what a relatable experience to see your friend become an amnesiac and ultimately a cult leader and develop a group of followers that just worship him. Yeah. Like, that has happened to me so many times.
I hate it when that
and
happens.
And it's like, now I have to go lead a group of people to confront him and say, hey, dude, your name is Jerry. Stop it, Jerry. Everybody shout at Jerry with me. And like, I think that is something that really touched my heart with that whole experience. Just so true. Just a really true thing.
Just like it happens in real life all the time.
All the time. Come on, Jerry.
Come on, Kadarin. Come on.
Come on, Kadarin. Come on.
Come on.
Hey, buddy, remember who you is.
That, I agree with you, Wyatt. That was an amazing moment when we were able to stand on top of these steps and shout at Kadarin and shout at the acolytes. And have him, the main acolyte, actually turn away from the actor with whom he was conversing and speak to us.
Oh, yeah.
I remember in one moment he was speaking to me directly, calling me a liar as I called him a liar.
It was, Chandler was really into it. Like, yeah. he was screaming, and it was great.
It cracked me up too. Someone in the crowd came up to Chandler and was like, are you guys actors? Are you planted? And we're like, nope, we're just guests here.
We're committed to the story.
Yeah. And that lady's eyes just kind of like lit up. I think that's finally, unfortunately, this was the second to last night of lore, I think it just lit up and she was like, oh, we're doing this wrong. And we're just like, yeah, no, like, get invested. I think they kind of expect it. Yes, it is this tableau, this scene, but you can add to that. I mean, again, if you do that, please be respectful and like try to notice like they still do have something to say as part of this story, but you're definitely welcome to add, I think.
I mean, also to kind of jump back into it, it wasn't just the fairies and the Fae King that are having these interactions, but it's also other characters in the park that have kind of beef with each other.
Yeah.
So we saw an interaction between Wen and Sephthys, the executioner. They had like this little romance going on, But Wen was like, nah, brah, your mustache is too bloody for me. I ain't into it. And so they finally confronted each other. And that was a cool moment. And a lot of things were starting to kind of pop off towards the end of Lore. These tableaus where the actors were confronting each other instead of just sending us to go to fairy messages in between them.
It was getting intense.
It was getting really heavy.
There was even a vision, like multiple visions of like serious destruction. One of them being like everyone's favorite tavern owner, Suds, his girlfriend and love interest that the players at Evermore kind of sparked off as like just kind of like a side thing. But in this vision, they saw Clara, Sud's girlfriend, being consumed by a vicious wolf. Like, it was really interesting to see how things were just sparking off that night.
Yeah, and Pasha. Like, Pasha started going a little wild.
Definitely. Pasha no longer was actually Pasha. He referred to himself as now being Nex, a female general of the darkness from Lore. He came to consume all. And it was really cool when we spoke to now Nex that he didn't remember, or rather she, didn't remember who we were and was completely encapsulated all of who Pasha was. And that was kind of terrifying as he became her and this whole darkness was consuming everywhere. And unfortunately, not only did it extend to now Pasha, now Nex, but also some of the other people that we've talked about.
I'd also like to add that at this time, Thurgood had kind of created an antidote. Not an antidote. It was like a pain reliever. So Finley ended up getting his sanity back, but he was just in constant pain all the time. So we had this great moment of hope, but then we realized that it doesn't work on people like Nex, and it's not curing Finley. It was just kind of helping, but it started to lose its potency and it was starting to take back over. And so we had like this little bit of hope, and then everything was just getting so dire and so dark, and like the acolytes were fighting the druids, the knights had a confrontation with the hunters, and it was just kind of getting a little rough in the little old Evermore.
It appeared as though in every relationship, in every tension, in every interaction, the darkness was an ever-present character that although we could not see, we knew was there and continued to consume endlessly.
Not every relationship. I think we can all kind of be like, find some solace in Clara and Suds. Like, that was the thing that kind of held everyone on, was like, these two are in love, despite this darkness, despite it killing off every friendship ever, these two love each other, and that ain't gonna just, yeah, like, that's it. And that was awesome. And in fact, I think their love interest got so, like, backed by the Worldwalkers that Suds proposed to her, and then they became engaged, and it was like, screw you, darkness, this is great.
But wait, we go back to that vision that the fortune tellers were sharing of this wolf consuming Clara. The night after their engagement, the worst of all worst things that could have happened, happen. We receive news that Clara has become infected. She is now a dark blood. And as such, the last burst of light of hope that we had is erased. It's gone. It's cut out. Snuffed out like a candle in the night. All hope is lost.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We appreciate you coming and stopping on by. We really hope you enjoyed the story of Lore. And
Wait, you're gonna tell me that we stop right there? That's it? That's Lore?
Oh no, that's not the end.
Okay.
There's more next week.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So wait, are you telling me I have to listen next week?
What?
Yeah, a cliffhanger of sorts, like they did to us.
Ah.
I gotta make you experience the tension. We gotta make them experience the tension. You know, no, I'm gonna speak directly to you, listener. I need to make you experience the tension that we had, because there was this darkness, and then all hope was extinguished. And then you can find out what happens on our next episode, where we'll discuss how this all was resolved. Was it happy? Was it dark?
Will there be heroes? Will there be villains? Who knows? We do!
Again, we wanted to just do a huge thank you for all of you guys who are listening, for telling all of your friends about episode one, and we hope that you tell all of your friends about this episode and that you get excited about the season of Lore with us, or maybe you found someone that had experienced the season of Lore and you asked them about it. If you really love this podcast and if you really are sharing it with everybody, go ahead and rate us on iTunes or wherever that you are listening. Those beginning reviews, those 5-star reviews, is what launches us to help us spread the news of this wonderful park and these wonderful experiences. Again, you can reach out to us on worldtalkers.podcast@gmail.com. You can send in your Evermore experience, and we'll say it right here on air. You can also follow us at World Talkers on Instagram. So both Twitter and Instagram, same handle, at World Talkers. But again, guys, we are so happy to be doing this podcast. We're happy to go back to Seasonal Lore, and we just can't wait to get started next week.
And as a reminder, all of the characters, all of the story is owned by Evermore, and we are just talking about it because we love it. Again, thank you for listening, and thank you for loving these stories. We hope you really enjoy it. We really enjoy talking about it. We're again an unofficial Evermore podcast that loves talking about Evermore.
Just a note here, we did not share everything that happened in Lore, what you could have experienced, or what you could experience in the other seasons. Please, 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 please visit evermore.com to experience the magic and enter the story like they would like us to.
Yeah, this has been the podcast. Here's a kiss from me. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Love you. And until next time, we are the World Talkers, and we'll be seeing you
beyond the portal.